Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Our yoga instructor challenged us to find inner peace. I found it faster than anyone. After 4 seconds, I stood up and screamed,
I found nirvana! I win!
They asked me to leave. I guess they don't respect winning. Bet365 does, though. New customers get $200 in bonus bets just for betting $10. Namaste, losers. Bet365. Winning is everything. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-MY-RESET. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. TNCs apply. In-app only.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Number two of the early line right here on Sports Grid. Kevin Walsh, Donnie Wrightside are with you here on this Wednesday morning. My oh, my. Oh, boy. Listen, this is one of those stories that I kind of like to lay out for, to be honest with you. This is right up DRS's alley. I like to let him set the table. I'll do a little bit of table setting here, and then he can kind of carry the load. Essentially, what we have is a $1.5 million fine, I believe, and a first-round pick taken away from the Miami Dolphins due to illegal tampering that came from Stephen Ross in the recruitment of Tom Brady and Sean Payton. A loaded situation. Lay this out for the people. Your takeaway, what is going on in Miami?
It was insane when we first heard some of these rumors breaking over the offseason, because it was insane to me, Kevin, that Tom Brady was going to retire after the season that Tampa Bay had, figuring he'd have at least one or two more runs where he would go out on his terms. Lo and behold, we hear like Tom Brady was going to retire, then reemerge as an owner for the Dolphins, then decide as a part owner of the Dolphins. He is going to play football for the Dolphins, but only doing so if Sean Payton came along. The only issue, Tom Brady played for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and Sean Payton was coaching for the New Orleans Saints. So all this was madness going on. And let me also, when you say set the table for this one, you know I like to do this, equate it to other sports. What does Adam Silver think about this, if this went actually happened in the NBA? Is it a $3 billion fine and a ban from NBA history for the ownership group because of meddling charges where you can't even send a tweet? If this would have been pulled off in the NFL, I don't even know what would have happened to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Hold on, wait. This guy's under contract with us. Mm-hmm. He retired, bought into another team, and then says, I'm an owner of this team. There's some bylaw 56B/2.3 that says if you're an owner, you can play for your team, and it doesn't matter what the contract status of another player is with another team. I don't even know where this came from. But my goodness, for an ownership group of the Dolphins to go, you know what? Let's go swing for the fences and get maybe the best possible coach and the best possible quarterback to come play for me. I applaud it, and it only cost him $1.5 million and a first-round draft pick. What were the Dolphins doing, and how did this go almost under the radar and almost come to fruition here?
It is incredible. But the fascinating thing is that the Brady tampering period is 2019 when he was in New England. So Brady's been planning that exit strategy for quite some time here. Yeah. I know a lot of people are trying to figure out, you know, oh, well, why is Tom not being suspended? I think it's pretty easy for a player to cover tracks in terms of tampering. Again, we know there's, you know, investigations going on right now into the Sixers and the Knicks. They're not investigating Jalen Brunson and James Harden. Do you know what I mean? Like, those guys aren't going to be suspended for games. Tampering is largely going to fall the blame on the organization significantly more than the player. So I am not really kind of like up in arms, suspend Tom for multiple games. I don't think we're going to get there. I will say, though, somebody made a very good point yesterday. I don't remember who pointed this out, so forgive me, but it's fact-based as is. It's not opinion. There have been three forfeited first-round picks in NFL history, and they all involve Tom Brady. Deflategate, Spygate, and now the tampering gate, whatever you want to label this year in Miami. Boy, Tom does have a littered history, no doubt. The radio audience is here on a Wednesday morning. It's Kevin Walsh and Donnie Wrightside with you on SiriusXM Channel 159. Man, there are two directions we can go here. And I guess I'll go with maybe the more interesting one for people. Considering that we are kind of having this conversation, are you putting any stock into the idea that Tom Brady is going to play for a third organization at some point in his career?
He turned 45 today. He's 45. He's not 35 or 25. Yeah. If sure Tom Brady plays for another NFL franchise, it would be mind-boggling that, 48-year-old Tom Brady, finally a free agent, chooses the Buffalo Bills after Josh Allen gets injured midway through the season. It can't happen. It won't happen. It might happen, Kevin. How can you put it past Tom Brady? He'll play till he's 50 if he wants to, apparently.
Look, we know that, you know, Brady and LeBron have a loose friendship there. I mean, again, like that is just straight out of the NBA, an NBA player power. Like, I'm going here. I'm bringing this guy with me. I'm bringing this guy with me. That would have been, I'd like to believe also, someone convince me, please, that Gronk was like, I'll only play if we're in Miami next season. Like, Tampa Bay, I get it. It's close. But I need to be in South Beach. And Gronk's like, yeah, I'm out. And Gronk will be in Miami. And Sean Payton and the whole crew will show up. All right, there's enough time to bring up one other piece of this. The NFL cleared Stephen Ross of the allegation that he offered Brian Flores $100,000 to lose football games while acknowledging that that absolutely happened. They're just confidently saying the tone of his sentiment was a joke and not a legitimate offer made to Brian Flores. Come on now. You have to be kidding me, Donnie.
That guy, hey, Stephen Ross, Chris Rock, Dave Chappelle, same guy, busting jokes all over the place and getting away with it at this point here. Yeah, he said it in jest, man. Well, he said it to me 13 times. Every time was funnier than the last, Kevin, apparently.
Just knee slappers across the room. Yeah. We're going head-to-head at the wide receiver position next year on the board.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Wide receiver Wednesday here on the early line. We're taking a look at a pair of teammates here in our head-to-head matchup, Ja'Marr Chase versus T. Higgins. Now, on Monday, we talked Russell Wilson versus Matthew Stafford. The same exact odds to win MVP. That was, I think, about picking which guy you would have preferred to bet for the MVP, right? You didn't feel like you were going to be able to say, give me both. Yesterday, Taylor, Henry, same exact odds. Don and I very naturally disagreed on it. I'm all about Derrick Henry this year. He's all about Jonathan Taylor. This is a little different, but I wanted to do it this way. These are teammates. Reasonably, they can both have monstrous seasons. It would obviously mean a massive year for their quarterback, but it sets up for an interesting conversation. The Cincinnati Bengals have one of the most exciting young cores in football, coming off of an AFC championship and a trip to the Super Bowl and nearly winning that game. And the two stars at the wide receiver position, because I think you might make an argument that T. Higgins is a star and you know Ja'Marr Chase is, enter the year with similar expectations, but clearly there is an edge to the sophomore in Chase. Chase right now for the season-long numbers has a touchdowns mark of 10.5, a receiving yard number of 1,210.5, and his odds to have the most receiving yards in the NFL are 12-1. Let's start with Ja'Marr Chase, DRS. Your expectations for the sophomore coming into year two.
Another monster season. Like we always say to ourselves, like where does a player or a team improve themselves typically between weeks one to weeks two of the NFL season? Well, for a player, you get a taste of the NFL. You go then back into the lab in the offseason, work on your body, work on your routes, and come back for even more in year two. Ja'Marr Chase had almost 1,500 yards receiving last year. And the best part about that is, Kevin, 81 catches, which is good for 18 yards per catch, which is insane in the NFL. He was a rookie. Do you remember about this time last year, Ja'Marr Chase took that year off. He can't catch. Like, he needs the white lines on the football in college because that's the only way he can see the football. Boy, did they make a mistake. Yeah, he can't catch all this way to 1,500 yards and a Super Bowl appearance. Mm-hmm. I expect monster things this year from Ja'Marr Chase. But having said that, where's the value between Ja'Marr Chase and also T. Higgins as we take a look at it? But for myself now, is there anybody out there right now that takes a look at that 1,200 yards, Kevin, and says, yeah, stone cold under. No way he repeats that. Did you watch this kid play football last year? And also, the Bengals are a better team this year because Joe Burrow another year outside of the injury and also the moxie of going to the Super Bowl. Who's stopping Chase or betting against him? Not me.
And honestly, it was in 17 games, the 14-55. He didn't really play week 17. Two catches for 26 yards. That's inconsequential. I mean, 1,400 yards in 16 games as a rookie. How Chase just – I got to admit, here's the thing. He doesn't have to get better to cash all your tickets that you're looking at for the season-long situation on Ja'Marr Chase. And it's why him to have the most receiving yards in the NFL – makes a little bit of sense, right? But also maybe even receiving touchdowns, a mark where he's 9-1 in, co-third choice with Travis Kelce, Justin Jefferson, and Devontae Adams. A lot of guys kind of booked in a very similar area there. Ja'Marr Chase last year had the third most touchdowns and fourth most yards. Again, as a rookie, he jumps off of the page. The one thing, though, that is fascinating, of course, is T. Higgins missed a little bit of time last year, three games, still finished with over 1,000 yards receiving, finished at six touchdowns. But we got to the playoffs. And listen, Ja'Marr Chase was still the leading receiver overall, but Higgins had an awful first, or really a nothing first game, one catch for 10 yards. But Donnie, in the rest of that playoff run, 7 for 96, 6 for 103, and then in the Super Bowl, 4 for 100. And two touchdowns as well. A monstrous game and postseason run for T. Higgins as well. You look at this Higgins season-long numbers, the receiving touchdowns, 6.5, 4 less than Chase. 1,000.5 yards, a clean, palatable number. And hey, if you want to try and climb the ladder, 35-1 for the most receiving yards for T. Higgins if you're interested in getting involved that way. Considering the lesser nature of those Higgins numbers, are you maybe more interested in T. Higgins coming into this season?
Yes, and the only shameful part about this is he is battling a little bit of a shoulder injury, so they're taking it easy with him. And we know for a wide receiver, all it takes is one good shot there on the shoulder, and that could put you out for some time. But let's just say he does play and plays well, which I expect. Rookie year, Kevin, 908 yards. Second year, almost 1,100 yards. The maturation process is there. And also, you do say to yourself, like, well, he plays on the same team as Ja'Marr Chase. Can he get reps? And he had 110 targets last year in 14 games. He's going to get over 100 targets again this year. And also keep in mind, Ja'Marr Chase is the superstar of this football team. Ja'Marr Chase is the one that gets the safety help over the top. So T. Higgins, who's to say, can just go on the opposite side, Kevin, and do his, hey, 50, 60, 70, 80 yards a game. I don't even need to bust out for seven catches for 175 yards to make amends for my previous bad week. He just has to be steady and feed off of Ja'Marr Chase gets that bracket coverage and I don't. He'll be fine. If he's healthy this year and plays at least 14 games like he did last year, he's busting the 1,000-yard marker. And crazy to say, is Ja'Marr Chase the better wideout? Yes, he is. But the value you're getting on saying T. Higgins just get to 1,000 yards, which also keep in mind is a benchmark, Kevin. So when we start to talk about late in the season, T. Higgins has 750 yards receiving with three games to go. You know what your quarterback does for you? Don't worry, T. I'll get you that 1,000. Don't you worry about that. We'll throw you that football. Mm-hmm. Last game of the season, if it means anything here, he's 50 yards short. He plays the first quarter, six catches, 60 yards to the bench, 1,000 yards receiving. I love T. Higgins to go over 1,000 yards this year.
It makes a lot of sense. Again, he did it in only 14 games. Ja'Marr Chase, again, is the star of the show here in Cincinnati. But that's kind of a difficult thing. If you were going to try and provide extra resources on one of these guys, it would be Ja'Marr Chase. I think it's why Higgins ultimately had himself. Now, I know he had a 75-yard touchdown, so that kind of played a big factor into it, you know, his bigger game than Jamar Chase. But Higgins has that similar big playability that jumps off of the page there. And I think the fact that I feel as if I've already seen Higgins do it with some injury. Like, to be fair, while Chase cleared that number easily, right, Donnie, with you know, 200 yards to spare, that was playing 17 games. And obviously Higgins missed some time. It is, like you said, I am not running to the window on Jamar Chase overs, but how much can he beat this number by, right? I mean, what's he going to do? 1,800 receiving yards? That's what Cooper Kupp just did last year, and people were talking MVP. That's not a reasonable expectation. But tell me, if you were to put this in a match bet situation, right, and you put a spread to it, and you were getting 200 yards, which is really the number, on T. Higgins, do you think that Higgins, with kind of what we saw over the last three games of their playoff run, narrows this gap? 400 yards separated them last year. I've mentioned countless times, three games missed for Higgins. Does Higgins narrow this gap here with Chase over the season?
I think he can. Like, I really do, because the upside is there. This isn't a secondary guy that you said, hey, let's take a flyer in the fifth round on. He's a high draft pick here, and he performed as a rookie with not great quarterback play and also in year two. So if we're looking to emerge and say 1-1 on each side, why not? Who's to say Higgins can't have 1,400 receiving yards this year? As you say, like, climb the ladder. The talent is there to do that, and also the spotlight is there on the opposite side where you're working, Kevin, against the number two quarterback every week. You're working about, I can lift the top off this defense, because they're worried about Chase doing the same thing on the opposite side. There's no reason to believe that he can't be that 1A, 1B type wide receiver on that team, which means he challenges Chase for the overall number of receiving yards. Who's going to win that? Maybe he can.
35-1 for the most receiving yards in the NFL for T. Higgins. It's a big number. Maybe, though. Again, if you think Joe Burrow is going to have the most passing yards in the NFL, it might be worth a look. All right, that's enough for the NFL. We go back to Major League Baseball and preview today's call.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Back right here on Sports Grid, time to preview today's Major League Baseball board, and we're back at it with Blue Jays, Rays, some AL East action. I am very doubtful that Whit Merrifield will play in this game. No, he can play in this game, actually. What am I saying? We're in Tampa Bay. Whit's in a great position to play. Yeah. He's maybe in the best place you could possibly be in Florida, actually. Donnie, you think Whit Merrifield's got enough stroke to get him back to Dunedin and play their games in Florida again?
Yeah, or Salem Field up in Buffalo. He can have all that influence. And I'm not coming to Toronto unless we're playing in the States. Maybe he pulled that off.
There you go. Well, we'll see how it starts to materialize there. Nevertheless, Beeks versus Kikuchi. I see a total of 8. I see the matchup. I assume there's got to be some juice towards the over. Am I right?
Yes, there is juice towards the over, and I believe Beeks is going to open up today and then hand it off to Yarbrough. He's not a great pitcher. So when you take a look at the lineups overall past 30 days, that's a nice juicy lineup here for the Toronto Blue Jays. Now, given they haven't been all that great against left-handed pitching, so we'll see how it plays out today. Now, if we flip it over to the other side, Kikuchi, close to a 7 XFIP number over the past 30 days. He's a left-handed pitcher. He's done well, Kevin, against the 2 left-handed batters that he's faced. But against the other 30 right-handed batters, it's been a completely different story. Now, having said that, you are going to line up. There's going to be a lot of right-handed bats going against Kikuchi, but who is actually in this lineup? Take a look at the final 4 guys on this roster today that we're looking at. Can you name these names? Walls, Quinn, Pinto, and Chang are a part of that group. Jose Siri, who they just came over or just got from the Houston Astros, he's sitting in the cleanup spot here. One of those guys that usually would have like the first or second spot or down in the order. This is a rough lineup for Tampa Bay today that they're going to show out. But even having said that, pitching's not that great here. Pitcher's ballpark, I get it. Early game, sleepy environment at the Trop, sure. But I'm leaning towards the over as well in that 8 runs.
I know that those are two guys you mentioned. It's a good, it's a great thing that you indicated there for people. You're kind of capping Yarbrough for the Tampa Bay side of this, yeah, and Kikuchi. Those are guys that have you circled all season long. So for them to meet there, you're probably going to look maybe for Toronto to supply a little more of that juice, and maybe their slight dog price there could jump off the page as well, just because their lineup maybe has a little more juice. We're back at it again with Braves Philly. And it's Morton against Wheeler, about minus 140 here on Charlie Morton, which is understandable, although I can definitely see people getting to the window here on a plus price on Zach Wheeler. Total 7.5. Where does this game lead you?
Yeah, this game leads me to the Philadelphia Phillies, but not for the full game, Kevin, for the first five innings. You can get Zach Wheeler here at the FanDuel Sportsbook at a plus 112 price over those first five innings. Now, it's not to say that the Braves have a better bullpen, which technically they do, but if I'm just going head-to-head Wheeler versus Morton, and I think the Phillies can hang around, that's the spot I'm looking to pick up on. Because over the last 30 days, mm-hmm, Wheeler has been very good. Lefties against him at 201 weighted on base percentage, righties a 290. So if we flip it over to the Philadelphia Phillies going up against Morton, who they're going to try to stack some lefties and righties, but you can get the Morton, the 363 weighted on base percentage against right-handed batters. And isn't it nice to break down a Philadelphia Phillies game today with a legitimate starting pitcher on the mound? So yeah, they have a chance today. They're not going to score the first run of the game and then watch Atlanta play 13 straight runs to dominate them yesterday. Wheeler will have them in this game, early environment. I would take the Phillies first five innings at a plus 112 price. If they're going to win this game, Kevin, it's not because the bullpen and the offense came back late. It's because Zach Wheeler was very good over the first five innings and they built a lead.
And if you're looking to throw it down a little bit more, you can take the half run in your pocket, and it's minus 128 right now on the FanDuel Sportsbook. So if you're evened up there, you're in a good position. I'm sure some people, though, might be interested in that plus price. To kind of add one extra piece there, Charlie Morton's had some struggles against the Phils this year. Three starts, 15 innings, pitching to a 6 ERA so far against the Philadelphia Phillies. So certainly a reason to believe there could be some juice behind the Phils in a couple of different ways. Mariners, Yankees, awesome, awesome game here at the stadium yesterday. Fantastic atmosphere, also fantastic, because you go to a game, you want the over, and it came in droves, really. A fantastic high-scoring game, but won by the Mariners. So the Yanks are looking to bounce back, and they're going to have to do so with Gerrit Cole on the mound. That part should be easy. But how about the Luis Castillo debut in Seattle? Makes for a headline game. What do you think, Yanks-Mariners?
Does make for a headline game. Yesterday, we looked at the two pitchers. I said, you know, it might be a sneaky team total there on the Seattle Mariners. They easily hit that, but also more or less talking about an over in that game because I thought both of those offenses might be able to wake up in a smaller ballpark in the Bronx, and they did. Today's that opposite feeling. It just feels like a 105 start in the Bronx, say, with Gerrit Cole. He's going to be able to hold down this offense. Over the past 30 days, take a look at this XFIP number for Gerrit Cole. 2.72, absolutely elite. If you look at the lineup today that we're looking at for the Seattle Mariners, of those nine batters, Kevin, seven of those below that Mendoza line of 325 going up against right-handed pitching. And again, this isn't just any right-handed pitcher. It's Gerrit Cole in the mound. Then Luis Castillo coming from the opposite side today. How about his XFIP? Not bad, 3.62 over the past 30 days, but he's been dominant. Look at the splits here over the past 30 days. A right-handed pitching Luis Castillo. 252 weighted on base average to lefties, 204 to righties. Now, is the lineup better? Of course it is for the New York Yankees. But I do think the Yankees end up winning this game, but nowhere near the, you know, double-digit runs we saw yesterday. I think it's a lower scoring affair. Give me the Yankees 3-2 in this game over the Mariners.
How about that? An exact score line from DRS. Yeah. What I will say is, and you can see that even with the run line there, right? To pay minus 140 for a run and a half, when a team is laying minus 190, it shows that low scoring indicator. Both of these pitchers' early strikeout props might point towards an under, but it's very juicy. Castillo minus 148 under 6.5, Gerrit Cole minus 134 under 8.5. These are very good pitchers. These are guys that people like to back. This is kind of what we talk about early. Put a number down, as Donnie talks about, circle it and get back to it. See if that juice can start to line up a little more. When you're going up against the top end pitching, sometimes and you're gonna try and fade them, you don't want to be laying as much juice as you have to here on these two guys. Want to see how those numbers materialize, but the early indicator for me is a pair of unders on both of those aces on the mound. Red Sox, Astros, Boston looking to stay hot, but they are certainly not favored to do so. Over minus 200 in a Jose Urquidy start. Now, that is a lot to me in a Jose Urquidy start. I am thinking there is some narrative built in. No way the Astros are swept here. We've seen the no way the Astros are swept situation, though, just very recently in Oakland. And they were swept. Is this a little inflated here on Houston?
Yeah, I guess what, with Alec Bregman out of the lineup on paternity leave, they're just not the same baseball team. Well, they should be today, because last time I did go up against Bello, the right-handed pitcher for the Boston Red Sox, who isn't very good, and they snuck an opener in, Kevin, which saved them a couple outs here for Bello. Today we're not listing there as an opener, but don't be surprised again if they do that later in the day. Bello scratched from the start, which just means there is going to be an opener where Bello comes in behind. The reason why I bring it up is he's the simple cap of this game, and if I'm looking from a betting perspective, it's going to be from a Houston Astros team total angle. Bell over the last 30 days, a 5.24 xFIP number. Lefties, Kevin, 443 weighted on base percentage against them. Righties, 425. There is no escape. The only escape is if they throw an opener, they can give two innings where Bello only has to go three innings. So keep an eye on that later on. And also keep in mind, looking at the Houston Astros overall, they haven't really raked right-handed pitching, Kevin, over the past 30 days. Estimated in the lineup today, Alvarez and Tucker, 487 weighted on base percentage and a 351. Outside of that, nobody else is really tipping the scales in your favor. This is just one of those where you see a bad pitcher in a hitter's ballpark, you take and you fade that bad pitcher, which is what I'm doing today with the Houston Astros team total to the over.
It's a five right now at plus 100. Maybe a 4.5 comes available there. A little juicier, but obviously means five is a winning situation. Also, if you know lefties really catch your eye, although, I mean, it's pretty clear everybody's been having their way with Bello, but if lefties specifically catch your eye, Yordan Alvarez, two-plus bags, minus 110. Kyle Tucker, two-plus bases, plus 100. Also tonight, the Trey Mancini debut. He is going to be a plus 115 member if you wanted to be involved with two-plus bases on him. We have, and I would say, enough time here to bring up Mets-Nats. Actually, you know what? Here's what we'll do. We'll preview Mets-Nats in a minute. DeGrom, he doesn't lose. The Mets lose his first game back. I don't care. I know how this city reacts to their baseball teams, and specifically the Mets, whenever things go wrong. More of the same, we'll never hit for them. How do you lose to the Nationals? They just traded everybody. We've kind of seen this a lot this year for some reason. These near minus 400 favorites losing baseball games. I don't know what it is, but it's happened a couple of times now throughout, and it's just kind of an it-is-what-it-is situation. It'd be different if they lost because DeGrom was blown up. He was fantastic. That's all that matters. He touched 102 on the gun, five innings of work, six strikeouts, only three hits, one earned, no walks. That's the story to me. Now, I know that they lost grabs the attention, but to me, Donnie, it was that DeGrom was fantastic.
It was, but I guess, like, you know, Joey from Queens calling in the WFAN, see that? We can't even win now. We get Darren Ruff yesterday at the deadline. I mean, we're going to make the playoffs at this point. Is that what you're getting from a Mets fan? When settle down. You're going to make the playoffs. You're going to have Scherzer and DeGrom 1-2. Worry about it then. Don't worry about the wins and losses right now. Worry about the health of those two aces up top.
I will say it is a little surprising that they didn't try and go over the top to force a big trade like the Contreras one that we had heard about. But nevertheless, we'll preview Mets Nationals after this break right here.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Mets Nats lines up today with Sanchez versus Bassett. Mets a big time favorite once again, coming off that loss. A minus two. I mean, Donnie, how are we doing? I mean, we feeling good this morning or what?
Man? I mean, come on. I would have sat there. I would have just sat there and let it ride. Like, what are we doing here? Are we live? I would have been one of those.
Yeah. No, we're. I almost cost myself though by picking up the pieces because that kind of alerts you to
you
it.
Know
maybe
it was coming, though.
More than
you
know it, coming. More than it's. Yeah, it is what it is. Anyway, Adibal Sanchez, his national team's a joke. I know they won yesterday. My God, Adibal Sanchez is out here getting in the mix. Really big number, though, on Bassett. I guess it's understandable. It's off of a loss. How do you bet this game today?
You know, it's funny bring this up because how many times, like before the deadline, I'm saying, like, the winners and losers of the trade deadline and the tax that you're going to have to pay sort of on these favorites and underdogs. And you're seeing it right now, right off the bat for the Nationals, because quite frankly, a week ago, you weren't getting these prices here with the Washington Nationals. They've waved the white flag and they did it, you know, weeks ago here. And you remember me the first time Anibal Sanchez showed up. I said, what is going on here? This is just a sign of how baseball is so backwards at times where you run Anibal Sanchez out there as opposed to one of your better prospects because you don't want to pay that prospect a year early because he might be good. It's ridiculous. So today, I look at it the same way. Forget about the game itself here. I'm going to get 9 guaranteed at-bats here against Anibal Sanchez and that weak bullpen for the Nationals and how it lines up even over the past 30 days. First 5 guys in the lineup anticipated here for the New York Mets. Nimmo, 346 weighted on base percentage against righties. Marte, 418. Lindor, 416. Vogelbach, 453. Alonso, 314. They should be able to hit here. And also, Anibal Sanchez over the past 30 days. 30 right-handed batters he's faced, Kevin. 454 weighted on base percentage. 240 ISO power number. To lefties, how about this ISO power number? 294. He's going to get lit up today. He has no business being in Major League Baseball. I look for a big bounce-back performance from the bats here for the Mets more than I do for winning the game. They'll win this game, but I'm more comfortable that this team's going to score over these 9 innings.
He's 38. You would think if a guy was 38 still making it happen, it's like, yeah, look, man, surprisingly, they still have juice. Like, no, he has no juice. He's an innings eater for a really, really bad baseball team, and you just have to try and take advantage of those guys when you can. We talk about those first fives. It's minus 168, but it's only minus a half run, as opposed to having to lay 1.5 runs. That Mets team total checks in at a 5.5, and minus 106, not plus 100 there or anything like that. So it kind of goes to show the expectations are that they are going to absolutely smash Anibal Sanchez today. Angels Athletics. You know, Otani's got the ball, so obviously that is noteworthy. It just is fascinating to me that this is a team with Mike Trout, Otani, and once again, they are sellers at the deadline. But that is the scenario that we are given. A minus 245 number on the Angels is down now on the FanDuel Sportsbook to a minus 230. Total here is a 7. I was just about to say I would think it's under City, but Caprillion's got the ball. What do you do here, Donnie, with this game?
Yeah, you're right. Caprillion does have the baseball, but at the same time, what is that Angels offense going to even be able to do against a Caprillion? Then we take a look at Shohei Ohtani on the mound going up against that anemic offense for the Athletics. It just screams another 3-1 game like you had last night. Like, remember, oh, Noah Syndergaard's not going to start. Maybe that should be an over. No, they just bring in a reliever base, a long reliever off the bench, and shut down the Oakland Athletics lineup. It feels like that's the same vibe I'm getting today. Do you want to lay a minus 230 price here with Ohtani? I don't. So I look at the 7s and say, what's more of a case that can happen? Ohtani gets blown away over the first 5 innings, gives up 5 earned runs, or he actually blows away the Oakland Athletics, and then you say to yourself, all right, just give me 1 or 2 runs from the Angels, and we pick ourselves up a victory here. That's the way that would lean at this point. Also, from an AL MVP standpoint, like if Ohtani goes out tonight, goes 7 innings, 1 earned run, 12 Ks, yeah, he's supposed to do that against the A's. This is like one of those games where you say to yourself, it's an automatic lose-lose for Ohtani, because if he goes out 6 innings, 2 earned runs, which is a quality start, he didn't have it tonight. Even though they won the game, you should have shut out the Athletics. This is like going up against the Yankees or the Astros and saying, boy, he really moved the needle. He's expected to dominate tonight. And if he doesn't, that's a terrible look for him in the overall AL MVP race.
But to your point, he probably will. He's plus 390 right now. It's tough because you don't know what Judge is going to do. If you had to guess, if I had to guess, plus 390, is it, you know, is it going to be 4-1 or better or underneath it? I would probably guess he's underneath it. I mean, he probably strikes out double-digit batters once again. So we don't have the Ohtani strikeout prop right now in the FanDuel Sportsbook. I think the number is going to be, just kind of checking around, probably 8.5. Ohtani is a projection beater. There are guys that get in grooves and the projections just can't catch up to them. Or they're trying to sell you on the bottom and you just keep getting beat over the head. LeBron did this past season with the Lakers. He was scoring 30 every game. There was no projection model that believed that was going to continue. It did. And if you were going to ride the overs, you were winning. And if you were trying to catch the bottom of it, you were getting absolutely picked apart. Ohtani is now 6 consecutive games gone over his strikeout prop. And trust me, in the room, they're well aware of this. Because the people that are not trying to run off the projection model, give me Ohtani over his strikeouts. And they bet it every game, and they're winning every game. And there's people that are every game betting Ohtani 10-plus strikeouts. And they're winning plus money every single time out. If you line it up, if you like to roll through projection models, Donnie, on Ohtani's under strikeouts, you have to step away. Because you are getting annihilated every single time he has the ball.
Yes, and also the Ohtani double-double tonight is what you're looking for if you're in that AL MVP race. That's the 3-for-4 at the plate with a home run and a dominant pitching performance. Those can certainly make inroads, but there's not a lot of wiggle room now for Ohtani. He's got to be sensational every game to sort of climb back in. But I guess over the next 2 weeks, if he does have some good performances and you continue to pitch against the Athletics, there's some good vibes that maybe he can shrink that number down.
To be fair. If there was ever a game where he was going to go out there and strike out double-digit batters and homer, it has to be against the Athletics and Caprillion. No? Like, that has to be the most perfect matchup imaginable for it. So, again, we'll see how that lines up there, but certainly something we'll have our eye on. Rockies, Padres, what do we think now? Because I don't believe we have odds for this baseball game. And that's probably because we don't have an indicator on a Soto Bell debut. Is that what we're going to be anticipating here?
Yeah, that's what we're waiting for, that finalized roster where we joke about, like, the game starts 9:40 Eastern tonight. You get the lineup at, like, 8:40 Eastern because finally everybody clears. You had everybody taking their, you know, medical checks and clearances. They're in town. Their uniforms are there. They got there safely. There's no plane delays. That's what we're going to wait on today. But if that does happen and we get a full-go lineup tonight for the San Diego Padres, a full-go means maybe Josh Bell doesn't play, but at least Juan Soto does. The team total over here for the Padres is starting to make a lot of sense tonight with Chad Kuhl in the mound. So even though we don't have statistics we don't have actual odds and what we can look forward to, how about Kuhl's 7-plus xFIP over the past 30 days? How about him to lefties, 445 weighted on base percentage? How about the righties, a 534? If there's one party that needs to get started tonight in San Diego, it's the runs party here for the Padres. Watch out.
It's one of these, you know, spots where you look at yesterday, they had a doubleheader. Profar, Machado, Cronenworth, Alfaro was that top four. Just insert Soto and Bell right into that situation. It's exactly what you're looking for. And considering they're coming off of a doubleheader, I'm sure they'd love to get those guys in as soon as possible to give these guys a breather and make that possible for them. Tell me, Donnie, considering Kuhl, if Soto and Bell are in, is there a number you're looking for, or where you're? Because I have a feeling we talk, you know, narrative numbers. It's probably going to be a little bit bigger if it is the Soto Bell debut. What are you looking for in this game?
Yeah, because you're not even getting a matchup where it's like, okay, a good pitcher is going to be on the mound. Chad Kuhl is expected to get rocked tonight. So if we're looking at the FanDuel Sportsbook, what's one of those pieces that comes up tonight? A 5 at like a minus 104 just seems about right. But if they can throw up that 4.5 with some juice, I'm certainly taking that. I think they can get 5 runs or more tonight. Okay. But I look at that number as saying, like, we're not going to give you guys any leeway. We know you guys want to come strong if Bell and Soto show up in this lineup against Chad Kuhl and that terrible Colorado Rockies bullpen. You should be able to get the 6 runs. We're not going to cheapen it on you. It's probably going to end up being one of those 5s with low juices is what I'm anticipating here.
Gotcha. All right. Something we'll continue to take a look at. Here's another thing we'll take a look at. Dodgers Giants, 6 consecutive for the LA Dodgers against the San Francisco Giants. Carlos Rodon not moved, which is a shame because I think Carlos Rodon would have been a real impact player at the deadline. But ultimately, San Fran's going to see what they can do here. I am sure, though, they are desperately waiting for this series to be over. It's another number, though. Like, to be fair, if you've been betting the Dodgers, the first two games of this series, you've done so at under minus 150, right? If you're a $100 better, you go to win 100, you're up $200. You're probably laying the 162. Again, I know people usually at that minus 150 threshold is usually where people put it at, but honestly, why aren't people just going to line up the Dodgers again? They are smashing this Giants team.
Yeah, and the Dodgers don't, excuse me, the Giants don't seem like they're in it to win it for the second half. Didn't really get any boost here. Traded Darren Ruff, who's not a great piece to the puzzle, but still got rid of him. You know you're actively shopping Rodon, which means that flag is up in the locker room saying, we don't really think we're going to be contenders this year, and rightfully so. And who's going to stop that Dodgers offense? But having said that, Cobb's been pretty good here for the Giants. 3.17 XFIP over the past month of baseball. Very good splits here, Kevin, particularly with this ISO power numbers to lefties at an 0.56 and righties at an 0.83. And then if we take a look at Urias on the mound here for the Dodgers, equally as talented. I look at that 7.5, and it's crazy to say. I like the under because of what the Dodgers have been doing to the Giants. But I think this game does play to an under tonight. I can see this being one of those 4-3 type games where you, just by the skin of your teeth, stay under that number.
With the thing with the Giants, though, and this Dodgers kind of matchup here, is the Dodgers have also covered the run line in every single one of these six games that they have now beat the Giants in as well. You know, that number tonight is plus 106. You can just kind of tell right now the way the Dodgers are playing, they're just rolling. And it's a scary team to go up against right now. So maybe trying to transition to a total could make some sense. Was there anything else on the board? You know, the one game that we didn't get to that probably deserves a level of mention is Sandy Alcantara up against the Cincinnati Reds. Just because it's Sandy, they're a minus 200, and just kind of how dominant we think he might be against a Reds team, sellers at the deadline, no expectations, certainly moving forward. Are you looking to back Sandy at all on today's board?
I mean, it makes some sense there, but maybe even back in an under. Again, I told you yesterday, you know, the switching up of the ballparks, playing in Great American Ballpark. Now you go down to, you know, South Florida. It's a world of a difference in a different environment. He should be able to dominate today. 2-1 game yesterday feels like almost in the same realm. Both of these lineups stink, and you have the best pitcher in the National League on the mound on one side. I think this game plays to an under. Now, Contra should dominate in this game, no question about it.
Minus 160 to win the NL Cy Young. 150-1 to win the NL MVP. He has worse odds than CJ Cron. Someone makes sense of that. Someone makes sense of that number. You can't, by the way.
Cron's got that big stick.
Yeah. Like leads the NL in WAR, but pitching an MVP only matters for one guy. Donnie writes how to close out the early line after this quick break here on Sports.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
All right, last segment of the day here for the early line, SiriusXM channel 159, right here on the Sports Grid Network. As usual, Kevin and myself carrying it from 7 to 9 a.m. before we hand it over to the morning after and Ben Stevens. A lot of great topics today we're going to be hitting on the Sports Grid Network, and no bigger than the Major League Baseball deadline. We got it. We covered it. It's exciting. We'll see what the Padres do in the second half of the baseball season. NFL training camps underway, injuries, and also keep in mind, tomorrow we got live NFL football. But I got to tell you, the clock is running out on the NFL. Listen up. Now, why is the clock running out on the NFL? What do you mean, Donnie? Super Bowl is not for months and months and months away, and we got at least another month before the regular season kicks off. But how about this? To file an appeal, the whole Deshaun Watson scandal coming to a head, where we saw the NFLPA say, whatever the judge says, we're going to let it rest. We'll abide by it. It came out. It was six games. Now, the NFL had 72 hours to sort of say, rebuttal, No go, yes, opt in, opt out. And they have until 9 a.m. Eastern Thursday morning to make that appeal happen. Now, legal experts across the land, multiple sources saying they expect the NFL to weigh in on this and expect that they will exercise their right to file an appeal, which goes right to the new arbitrator, and that's Roger Goodell, and what he says is final. Now, the NFL optics are tough either way here. They're in a lose-lose situation. If they go in and say, we're going to file the appeal, the NFLPA says, well, why did we collectively bargain to have an outside source review a case and for you only to say no and put in your own penalty process? But if you are the NFL, as I said, a lose-lose situation, you take a massive hit if you come in and don't appeal this and he only gets six games. Look for this to possibly double at this point when the NFL, before it even started, wanted to have at least 1 year plus and a heavy fine. We'll see what happens with Roger Goodell, but I expect something to happen today for the NFL before the clock does run out. Well, the clock ran out on the show on the early line. Stay tuned next for more Sports Grid programming.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.